low vision, or have another print disability, which makes reading, holding a book, or turning a page difficult or impossible. The content is copyrighted by the respective publishers. For more information, please visit us on the web at nfradioreading.org.
Hello, this is Corrine, and for the next hour, I'll be reading from the November 17th, 2025 issue of the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. As always, thank you for joining us today. The highlights under business and finance are: the bond market is on pace for its strongest year since 2020, returning 6.7% in one widely tracked index as the Fed pursues lower interest rates and inflation pressure continues to moderate. Tesla is requiring its suppliers to exclude Chinese-made components in the manufacturing of its electric cars in the U.S., a fresh example of the fallout from the U.S.-China trade tensions. The very rich are taking advantage of an ecosystem of members-only services to gain an extraordinary degree of privacy and insulate themselves from inconveniences such as waiting in traffic or in line. As tactics of mass layoffs shift to the use of text messages and emails, with the goal of minimizing public confrontations, employers are still often committing snafus in the process. An Estonian city near the Russian border will be crucial in Europe's push to secure a foothold in the global rare earth metal supply chain dominated by China. The blast that killed 16 workers at a Tennessee explosives plant last month has put a spotlight on safety regulation gaps in the industry. Generative AI has new fans in small businesses that employ the technology to schedule worker shifts, provide price quotes, and do customer service and other work. Meta is on a pop-up store spree, adding a New York outlet to existing locations in Las Vegas and Los Angeles as it pushes to stir demand for its Ray-Ban AI glasses. Now for the key articles under the Worldwide section. Trump threw in the towel on dissuading House Republicans from backing a measure to release files related to Epstein, saying that GOP lawmakers should instead embrace the vote. A new nuclear arms race involves the U.S., Russia, and China, with Beijing catching up fast and Moscow developing a variety of new generation systems. The FAA is lifting flight restrictions related to the shutdown, clearing the way for normal airport operations. The Trump immigration crackdown reached Charlotte, North Carolina, where federal agents made 81 arrests and local leaders denounced the move. The White House is studying proposals on the affordability issue, including direct payments to Americans and tariff reductions in response to GOP election losses. Hardline rightist parties showed strength in the first round of Chile's presidential election, which put a pro-Trump candidate in position to win next month's runoff. A coalition of countries that has long supported U.S. anti-drug efforts is fraying over America's boat strikes that are being denounced as violations of international law. Trump said the U.S. may hold talks with Venezuela's Maduro regime as the American military buildup near that country increases. Adriana Kugler's departure as a Federal Reserve governor came after she disclosed stock transactions that violated central bank policies. The picture on today's front page shows a jubilant crowd, mainly young people, with their fists and their hands in the air celebrating. And that caption reads, "A Lauderi shot." Chileans rallied behind hardline conservatives in Election Sunday amid anger over crime and immigration. Above, supporters of conservative candidate Jose Antonio Kast, who finished second to earn a spot in a runoff vote. The article, "Vote Positions Chile for a Turn to Trump's Side." A victory for Kast would mark shift from elsewhere in South America. By Samantha Pearson. Chileans rallied behind hardline conservatives in Election Sundays as rising anger over crime and immigration pushes the mineral-rich country to the right, setting the stage for a possible alignment with President Trump. In the first round of a presidential vote, some 70% of voters backed the four leading right-wing candidates, Jose Antonio Kast, a 59-year-old ultra-conservative former congressman, secured 24% of the vote, earning a spot in the December 14th runoff vote. Jeanette Jara of the Communist Party, allied with President Gabriel Boric's leftist government, placed first with some 27%. But far short of the majority needed for an outright victory. With other leftist candidates failing to garner support, Jara is widely expected to lose to Kast in next month's runoff, polls show. A victory for Kast and his Republican Party would mark a broader shift away from progressive governments in South America. In Argentina, President Javier Milei has consolidated his alliance with Trump and his MAGA movement. Bolivia elected a centrist, pro-market president last month after nearly two decades of socialist rule. His inauguration, attended by Christopher Landau, the U.S.'s Deputy Secretary of State. And conservatives appear poised to do well in presidential elections in Peru and Colombia next year. A Kast presidency could give Trump another strategic ally in Latin America as the U.S. looks to increase investments in mining while countering Chinese influence. Chile is one of Latin America's most prosperous and developed countries. It holds about a quarter of the world's copper and a third of global lithium reserves, essential for electric vehicle batteries, mineral wealth that investors have found challenging to tap. Kast has publicly praised Trump, calling his electoral win last year a new victory for freedom and common sense in comments on X. He has also framed undocumented migration as a national security threat, urging Chile to adopt tougher border and deportation policies similar to those under Trump. It is a popular message in Chile The country is still one of the safest in Latin America, but recent shootouts in broad daylight and violent robberies, long a reality in Mexico, Brazil, and other countries, have shocked voters. Some 63% of Chileans now say crime and violence are major concerns, the second highest share after Peru in an Ipsos poll of 30 countries last month. Many voters blame the recent large influx of immigrants, largely from Venezuela, many of whom arrive on foot through Chile's remote northern border. Foreign-born residents now make up close to 10% of Chile's population. The bond market is headed for its best year since 2020. Slow jobs growth, consumer spending raise hopes for further Fed rate cuts. By Crystal Herr and Sam Goldfarb. Almost everything has lined up for bonds lately. The Federal Reserve has been cutting interest rates. Jobs growth and consumer spending are slowing, keeping hopes for further cuts alive, but not pointing to an imminent recession that would threaten corporate balance sheets. Inflation pressure has continued to moderate, despite fears that President Trump's tariffs will drive prices higher. A widely tracked Bloomberg U.S. aggregate bond index has returned around 6.7% in 2025, accounting for price changes and interest payments. That puts it on pace for the best year since 2020. In shift, president supports Epstein disclosure. Trump tells House Republicans to vote for file release after he faced defections. Anger with dissident GOP members spilled into the open in personal ways. By Alex Leary, Scott Patterson, and Siobhan Hughes, Washington. President Trump threw in the towel on dissuading House Republicans from backing a measure to release files related to sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, saying Sunday night that the GOP lawmakers should instead embrace the vote. House Republicans should vote to release the Epstein files because we have nothing to hide and it's time to move on from this Democrat hoax, Trump wrote on social media, calling it a distraction from Republican successes. It was a sharp reversal for Trump, who had sought for months to deter Republicans from supporting the measure. Nuclear race now matches U.S., China, and Russia. Nuclear-capable ballistic missiles were unveiled in September during a parade in Beijing, marking the end of World War II. By Yaroslav Trofimov. The new nuclear race has begun, but unlike during the Cold War, the U.S. must prepare for two peer rivals rather than one, as it has lost its clear industrial an economic edge. China, which long possessed just a small nuclear force, is catching up fast, while Russia is developing a variety of new generation systems aimed at American cities. Russian President Vladimir Putin has used nuclear saber rattling to throttle U.S. support for Ukraine. He has deployed nuclear weapons to Belarus and in recent weeks tested a nuclear-powered missile and a nuclear-powered submarine drone he claims are impervious to U.S. defenses. While Russia and the U.S. are still abiding by some arms control limits, such as the New START treaty that expires in February, China is quietly but rapidly leaping ahead. According to U.S. estimates, Beijing will reach rough parity with the U.S. in deployed nuclear warheads by the mid-2030s. Chinese leader Xi Jinping, for the first time, showcased China's nuclear triad, its land, sea, and air-launched ballistic nuclear missiles, at a Beijing parade honoring the 80th anniversary of victory over Japan in September. Putin, sitting to his right atop the Gate of Heavenly Peace, took note. So did North Korea's Kim Jong-un, sitting to his left. The growing bond between Moscow and Beijing has created an unprecedented level of strategic uncertainty for the U.S. and its European and Asian allies. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. This city is number one in legal homicides. Authorities in Jacksonville label cases self-defense, not reflected in murder stats. By Hannah Critchfield, Paul Overberg, and Mark Miramont. Jacksonville, Florida. Florida's landmark Stand Your Ground law, intended to afford citizens greater self-defense protections, appears to give incentive for police and prosecutors to classify tough cases as justifiable homicides, according to some criminal justice researchers. Justifiable homicides help reduce crime rates because they aren't included in violent crime statistics. Nationally, Jacksonville ranks number one. From 2021 through 2024, it had a larger share of its homicides classified as justifiable killings by civilians than any U.S. city or county, with a population greater than 500,000, the journal found. The journal analysis, using data from the Federal Bureau of Investigation supplied by police agencies, included only cases cleared as a justifiable homicide before reaching court. The Jacksonville Sheriff's Office reported 54 justifiable homicides by civilians to the FBI during those 4 years. The Sheriff's Office website and records list even more, a total of 65 for that period. In Jacksonville, police and prosecutors review cases together when investigating whether a killing is a justifiable homicide. The local state attorney's office has the final say. The ultra-rich pay big for extreme privacy, by Adrian Campo Flores. The ultra-wealthy are wielding their growing fortunes to glide through a rarefied realm, unencumbered by the inconveniences of ordinary life. They don't wait in lines. They don't jostle with airport crowds or idle unnecessarily in traffic. Instead, an ecosystem of exclusive restaurants, clubs, resorts, and other service providers delivers them customized and exquisite experiences as fast as possible. The spaces they inhabit are often private, carefully curated, and populated by like-minded and similarly well-heeled peers. The acquisitive power of the very rich is soaring. The net worth held by the top 0.1% of households in the U.S. reached $23.3 trillion in the second quarter of this year, up from $10.7 trillion a decade earlier, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. The amount held by the bottom 50% increased to $4.2 trillion from $900 billion over that period. The Miami area provides a window into this world. Long a destination for wealthy elites from the Northeast, Europe, and Latin America, it has become an even stronger magnet for the affluent in recent years, fostered by pandemic-era migration and the region's emergence as a technology and finance hub. Travel has always been a key feature of wealthy people's lives, and more than ever, they prioritize privacy, efficiency, and customization, industry specialists say. The beloved ladybug is having a publicity crisis. Once known for bringing luck, the insect now gets a bad rap thanks to an invasive species, by Owen Tucker Smith. They crept into his house en masse, climbing through the air conditioning units, clinging to the window curtains, marching down the wall, trotting across the vaulted ceiling, lurking in the gloom of the basement. John Nixon had never seen so many ladybugs in his life. The 35-year-old was taught these were friendly creatures. You rub their shell for good luck, he said. But by the time his house in central Maine was host to hundreds of them this fall, Nixon was fed up. This was, he said, too many ladybugs, even for a fan. It stopped feeling like good luck and started feeling like a nuisance. The ladybug, once a treasured member of the animal kingdom, is six legs deep in a publicity crisis. The harlequin ladybug, an invasive species of the bug, infamous for its habit of burrowing in homes each fall, has proliferated in the U.S. over the past few decades, quickly becoming the most populous ladybug in the world. The harlequin lady beetle has helped farmers and gardeners control plant-eating pests, and defenders argue it is basically harmless. But its tendency to crawl into any available crack or crevice and to emit an unpleasant yellow fluid when bothered has tarnished the reputation of an insect that many cultures once celebrated as a symbol of prosperity. Tesla curbs suppliers' China ties. EV maker to require firms to exclude parts made in Asian country in U.S. cars. By Raphael Wang and Yoko Kabata, Beijing. Tesla is now requiring its suppliers to exclude China-made components in the manufacturing of its cars in the U.S., a fresh example of the fallout from deepening geopolitical tensions between the U.S. and China. Earlier this year, the electric vehicle maker decided that it would stop using Chinese-based suppliers for Tesla cars that are made in the U.S., according to people familiar with the situation. Tesla and its suppliers have already replaced some China-made components with parts made elsewhere. Tesla is aiming to switch all other components to those made outside of China in the next year or two, some of the people said. Flub-Free Job Cuts Are Hard to Pull Off by Chip Cutter and Ray A. Smith. When Amazon.com began laying off 14,000 employees last month, some staffers learned of their fate via a text at home telling them to consult their inboxes. An email with the subject line, "Update regarding your role at Amazon," awaited them. Unfortunately, your role is being eliminated. Employees could join a voluntary meeting with a company leader or human resources representative to ask questions, it added. At that point, some decided, why bother? The swift text-email combination marked yet another evolution in the often-changing tactics employers deploy to jettison workers. The pandemic brought on the rise of individual Zoom calls and surprise calendar invites to human resources meetings. Now the aim is to keep layoffs even more efficient, with fewer chances for ugly public scenes or communal emoting. The goal is to communicate the bad news as quickly as possible across a large swath of the employee population to help control the message and limit stress on workers, said George Penn, a managing vice president at Gartner, who advises companies on how to minimize risks in staff restructurings. European Rare Earth Site Faces Hurdles by Kim Mackerel. Europe is trying to get itself on the global rare earths map, and a new facility on Russia's border is its opening bid. The city of Narva in Estonia, once a textiles hub for the Russian Empire, is now host to Europe's biggest production plant for the kinds of rare earth magnets needed in electric cars and wind turbines. It is part of Europe's push to secure a foothold in a global supply chain dominated at every step by China. Built by Canada's Neo Performance Materials and financed in part by the European Union, the factory is expected to begin commercial deliveries to companies, including the German car parts supplier Robert Bosch, next year. The problem? Even at the new factory's initial planned capacity of 2,000 metric tons of permanent magnet material, the plant will produce a fraction of what analysts estimate European manufacturers need. NEO plans eventually to scale up production to 5,000 metric tons, but that is still a long way from being enough to break Europe's dependence on China. Total European demand is forecast to reach about 45,000 metric tons by 2030. According to data from Adamas Intelligence, which tracks the industry, the U.S. has much more in the pipeline. Companies plan to build more than 40,000 metric tons of capacity in the U.S. by 2030, according to Adamas. After China imposed new export restrictions for rare earths in April, the Trump administration stepped up subsidies and other measures to support the industry, spurring a race to build out American mining, processing, and manufacturing capacity. Rare earths are also essential to manufacturing many defense systems. Small business owners are putting AI to good use by Catherine Bindley. Generative artificial intelligence has some unexpected new fans, small businesses. Mike Salvatore, owner of Heritage Hospitality Group in Chicago, used to run reports once or twice a year on the cost of goods for the two cafes, two bars, and the bike shop he owns. He would spend hours crunching potential price adjustments manually based on the expense of raw materials. Now he does it every 3 weeks with the help of OpenAI's ChatGPT. Salvatore, who is 44 years old, also feeds information from both his point of sale system and from bookkeeping service QuickBooks into Google's Notebook LMAI tool. The system makes a podcast about how the business is faring and how it could improve, which he shares with managers. It's essentially my CFO, Salvatore said, of AI. Every day is a new use case. Large corporations have teams mapping out AI strategies and deploying the new technologies. Small businesses are figuring it out for themselves. An August report from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce found that 58% of some 3,800 small businesses surveyed said they use generative AI. That is up from 40% in 2024 and more than double what it was 2 years prior. Restaurants are using AI to schedule worker shifts. Event planners use it to make seating arrangements and provide quotes. Interior designers are using image generation tools to visualize color changes or room layouts. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. From the editorial page, Trump and a new arsenal of freedom. Hegseth's acquisition reforms are crucial to reviving U.S. defenses. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth recently made a bracing remark that received almost no attention. "This is a 1939 moment," he told defense executives in a speech, "or hopefully a 1981 moment, a moment of mounting urgency. The administration deserves credit. If this urgency translates into fixing how the U.S. military fields equipment amid new threats and ways of war." The Defense Department has released memos on pushing the bureaucracy to move faster in buying everything from drones to missiles to ships. Most Americans have been hearing tales of Pentagon woe, late, expensive new aircraft carriers, an 8,000% price markup on a soap dispenser inside a C-17 bathroom. Mr. Hegseth says the administration is aiming to rebuild the arsenal of freedom, and the Trump crowd has identified the dysfunctions: overregulation, diffused accountability, and insufficient competition. Every process, every board, and every review must justify its existence, the secretary said. The Pentagon essentially wants to make faster and more flexible contracting authorities the default instead of the exception, and give more priority to the private economy to solve military problems. We will be open to buying the 85% solution and iterate together over time to achieve the 100% solution, Mr. Hegseth said, instead of demanding endless specs that only a few big contractors can meet. This is crucial to capitalizing on the recent influx of venture capital to the industry. New defense tech companies are a marvel of American ingenuity, but their success depends on the Pentagon buying their wares at scale and soon. The iterative nature of war in Ukraine also demands more ability to switch buying strategies as the tech evolves. Welcome is concentrating more authority in a portfolio acquisition executive who could oversee a suite of programs and make trade-offs on cost and performance. The current system includes far too many layers of authority. Program managers answer to dozens and dozens of folks and have to get permission to move a dollar to a better priority, a former U.S. Navy Secretary for Acquisition told Congress this year. The administration already made a good move in appointing a single officer to oversee President Trump's Golden Dome missile shield. And don't underrate presidential priority and accountability's role in producing results. Dogged management will also be essential to break bureaucratic inertia and turf wars among the services. Mr. Hegseth conceded that the problem is partially driven by a fickle Pentagon that, for example, buys a handful of munitions 1 year and then suddenly wants hundreds. We will stabilize demand signals. We will award companies bigger, longer contracts for proven systems to assure companies that expanding production lines will pay, he said. The asterisk is that the administration isn't proposing a defense budget that shows investors the Pentagon is serious. Is it 1939 or not? Mr. Hegseth is right that the department needs to increase acquisition risk in order to decrease operational risk, to take more chances to make sure U.S. troops always have the best equipment before the fighting starts. Yet such risks left the procurement system in part because U.S. defense spending has dipped to 3% of the economy from a peak of 6% in the 1980s. Risk means budget room for experimentation and the occasional failure. The Pentagon also needs money to buy redundancy, so it isn't stuck with only one vendor who can produce a given weapon. More sources reduce prices over time. Getting better bang for the defense buck is also crucial to persuading voters that the U.S. military is worth more investment. The Trump administration can rely on intellectual spade work from Senator Roger Wicker, and many of the ideas we've discussed here are in the next defense authorization bill. There is much defeatism these days among the American industrial base, but the recent U.S. development of a cheap cruise missile for Ukraine is a reminder that America can still choose to be nimble to meet a threat. If President Trump could start a revolution in military contracting affairs, it would be one of the biggest achievements in his second term. From the opinion pages, an online loophole that promotes violence. Section 230 shouldn't preclude liability for algorithms that push harmful content. After the assassination of Charlie Kirk at Utah Valley University, I asked Utahns to share their thoughts and feelings. Among the hundreds of messages that poured in, an alarming cohort spoke to the vicious cycle of online hatred they see and the isolation they feel on social media. Online platforms likely played a major role in radicalizing Kirk's alleged killer. Tyler Robinson's path to extremism didn't begin with secret back rooms or meetings after school. It began online, on apps that most of us scroll through every day. What used to be a gradual drift into extremism has become a rapid slide, driven not by ideology alone, but also by algorithms, code written to keep us engaged and enraged. These platforms are showing us what keeps us hooked. A tech executive told me at a recent Senate Commerce Committee hearing, "We want people to stay on our platforms. That admission tells us everything we need to know. Outrage keeps us online. Fear generates clicks. Division sells. None of this is accidental. It is a system carefully designed. Social media companies build products that thrive on our worst impulses and then hide behind the claim that they are neutral conduits for speech. But neutrality and manipulation can't coexist. Today, these companies are shielded by Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, a law written in 1996, only 2 years after President Bill Clinton sent his first email, and when the internet was little more than a digital message board. That law protects companies from being held liable for what users post. But that was before algorithmic feeds and artificial intelligence began promoting and shaping what billions of people see every second of every day. The internet has evolved, so why hasn't the law? Legislation I am introducing with Arizona Senator Mark Kelly will bring our legal code into the 21st century. The idea behind the Algorithm Accountability Act is simple. If companies use algorithms to influence the reach of content, they should bear responsibility when those algorithms negligently cause harm. We hold automakers accountable when a design flaw causes an accident. We hold pharmaceutical companies accountable when their products cause injury. There is no reason big tech should be treated differently. Some will raise the alarm that this threatens the First Amendment. It doesn't. Free speech means you can say what you want in the digital town square. Social media companies host that town square, but algorithms rearrange it. These algorithms decide who stands next to you, who shouts the loudest, and how often you hear the same angry echo until it drowns out everything else. Imagine standing in that square, pausing to consider an idea, when suddenly you are surrounded by a circle of voices repeating only that idea. That isn't free exchange. It's digital entrapment. The problem isn't what users say, but how algorithms shape and weaponize it under the protection of Section 230. We can't outlaw hatred, but we can demand responsibility from those who profit from fueling anger and division. Until these reforms are made, lasting change starts with how we treat each other on and offline. Mr. Curtis, a Republican, is a U.S. Senator from Utah. You are listening to a reading of articles and features from the Wall Street Journal on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Technology is making the war on cancer winnable. Malignancies that meant a certain quick death not long ago have become treatable, even curable. By Alicia Finley. James Watson, the geneticist who discovered DNA's double helix structure, died November 6 at 97, his late life goal within reach. "I want to see cancer cured in my lifetime," he told me in 2010. "It might be," I would define cancer cured as, instead of only 100,000 being saved by what we do today, only 100,000 people die. We shift the balance. Cancers that were considered death sentences not long ago, example, advanced melanoma, non-small cell lung and blood cancers, are now curable. Rather than carpet bomb cancer with chemotherapy and radiation, oncologists are deploying the pharmaceutical equivalent of drones and precision missiles. Consider some cancer advances over the past decade. Checkpoint inhibitors. These work by preventing cancer cells from evading detection by the immune system. The Food and Drug Administration approved Merck's immunotherapy Keytruda for metastatic melanoma in 2014. Keytruda has since been approved for some 40 types of cancer and become a mainstay in oncology treatment. Drug makers are working to develop more next-generation immunotherapies. Oncolytic virus immunotherapies. These shoot a virus such as herpes into tumors, causing them to self-destruct. The bursting tumor shoots out flares that spur the immune system's T cells to kill cancer cells around the body. One-third of melanoma patients who fail to improve on other immunotherapies experience remission on one of these experimental treatments by Replimune. CAR T cells. This is another type of immunotherapy. Technicians remove a patient's T cells in a lab and re-engineer them to recognize and attack cancer cells and leave healthy cells unscathed. More than a half dozen CAR T cell therapies have been approved since 2017 for blood cancers, and they can provide complete cures for some patients. CAR T cell therapies have shown promise in early trials for hard-to-treat solid tumors like glioblastoma. More than 250 trials for CAR T cell therapies were launched in 2023 alone. Antibody conjugates. These deliver a chemotherapy payload directly to cancer cells. This reduces harmful side effects from chemotherapy and can make immunotherapies more effective. The FDA has approved more than a dozen antibody conjugates since 2013, including for breast, lymph, and ovarian cancers. Radioligands. They work like precision chemo missiles, delivering radiation directly to cancer cells. The FDA has approved two such targeted radiation therapies since 2018. More than 100 trials on similar medications are underway. Cancer vaccines. Scientists are harnessing mRNA and other vaccine technologies to train the immune system to track down cancer cells lurking around the body. These have shown particular promise in aggressive cancers like pancreatic, triple negative breast, and melanoma. The aim is to destroy cancers and prevent recurrences. A small early stage trial showed that an experimental vaccine by Elicio Therapeutics stimulated a strong anti-cancer immune response in about 85% of patients with a KRAS gene mutation. This mutation, which is present in 90% of pancreatic and 50% of colon cancers, was once thought undruggable. Microbiome. Why do immunotherapists help some patients but not others? Scientists are discovering that diet might be a critical factor. A study last week found that gut bacteria break down fiber and other nutrients to produce fatty acid compounds, which fuel T cells to fight cancer. Multi-cancer detecting blood test. These have the potential to identify cancers that currently don't have screenings at early stages, when they can be more easily treated. A recent study found that Grail's Galleri test detected 73.7% of 12 cancers that are responsible for 2/3 of deaths in the U.S. Only about 10% of cancer treatments that begin clinical trials are ultimately approved by the FDA. But with more than 2,000 trials underway, odds are good that we will soon have many more breakthrough treatments. Artificial intelligence is also making it easier and faster to design treatments and to predict which patients will benefit from them. The biggest threat to more progress is the one that Watson named in 2010, an obstructionist FDA. During the 2000s, the agency's oncology chief, Richard Pastor, torpedoed treatments based on quibbles with their trial designs. But he experienced a regulatory conversion of sorts when his wife was diagnosed with terminal ovarian cancer. I have been on a jihad to streamline the review process and get things out the door faster, Mr. Pastor said in 2016. I have evolved from regulator to regulator advocate. FDA Commissioner Marty Makary last week elevated Dr. Pastor to head of the agency's drug review. Alas, Vinay Prasad, the agency's head of biologics and chief medical officer, is on his own jihad against cancer drugs because he thinks their benefits aren't worth the cost. Before joining the agency, Dr. Prasad criticized Dr. Pastor for accelerating many of the above treatments. On Dr. Pastor's 25th anniversary at the agency last November, Dr. Prasad tweeted, 25 years of the bar getting lower, pharma getting richer, drugs costing more. If Dr. Prasad's views prevail at the FDA, we might as well wave a white flag in the war against cancer. From the editorial page, How to Shrink Housing in Los Angeles. The city tightens its rent control law. Good luck finding an apartment. The economic law of supply and demand is simple enough, but Los Angeles is defying it again by tightening its rent control law in the name of housing affordability. The result will be fewer apartments and less affordable housing. The city currently restricts rent increases in properties built before 1978 to the Consumer Price Index, CPI, with an annual ceiling of 8%. These rent caps apply to about three-quarters of the city's multifamily housing units. Last week, the City Council voted to lower the cap to 90% of CPI, with a maximum increase of 4%. Landlords will also no longer be allowed to raise rents to cover an increase in utility charges. That means they will have to eat rising electricity rates caused by the state's destructive climate policies. Rents in the city are already about 60% higher than the nationwide average. One reason is a shortage of all types of housing. State permitting regulations, building code mandates, and local zoning rules add to building cost and impede new construction. Ditto the city's current rent regulation and a 2019 state law that requires landlords to demonstrate a just cause to evict tenants. Building permits for new housing have fallen 20% in California and LA since the law passed, while increasing 6% in Texas and 9% in Florida. Nearly all economists agree that rent control discourages housing investment and reduces supply. If landlords can't raise rents to cover their cost, including repairs, insurance, and utilities, they won't fix the leaky pipes or water heater. Forget about new developments. 3 decades ago, the state passed a law that prohibited local governments from applying rent control to single-family homes and apartments built after 1995. Progressives have repeatedly tried to repeal the state law, including with a ballot referendum in 2024. 60% of voters and 55% in Los Angeles County rejected it. The City Council and unpopular Mayor Karen Bass are ignoring this as they try to mollify residents angry about the city's high cost of living, sluggish economy, and the mismanagement that contributed to January's horrific wildfire. Employment in the city has declined 58,000 since January 2020, and its 6.4% unemployment rate is among the highest in the nation. Government, social assistance, and health care are among the few industries adding jobs. Culprits include the city's $17.81 an hour minimum wage, $20 for fast food, and $22.50 for hotel workers, and high local business gross receipt tax. Landlords warn that reducing the rent cap may cause them to sell their properties at steep discounts or remove rental units from the market. This is what happened after New York tightened rent restrictions in 2019. But there's apparently no education in the second kick of a progressive Democrat. You've been listening to a reading of articles and features from the November 17th, 2025 issue of the Wall Street Journal, which we read every Monday through Thursday at 11 p.m. Your reader has been Corrine.